After the taping of this episode, we were picked up by nerdly.co.uk to be hosted on their site. So I wanted to give a quick shout out to them. Follow them on Twitter at nerdlyuk and check out the website nerdly.co.uk. Welcome everyone to the Screamcast, the show that dives into all things Scream Factory and all things horror. I'm your host, Sean DeRager, and with me as always, the other host of the show, Brad Henderson. What's up?
Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm okay. Let me drink a little more rum. I think I'll be doing better.
We needed a little bit of alcohol in order to talk about our feature we're speaking about today.
Yes, today we will be discussing Beneath, the new Larry Fessenden directed film, not written by, not written by. And this is the newest release that we've actually we finally caught up.
Yeah.
So good for us.
I give myself a pat on the back.
Go team. But
go team, go.
Before we dive into talking about Beneath, I did want to bring up Scream Factory's Summer of Fear that they will...
You need to say that with a little bit more enthusiasm.
A little more?
Yeah.
Summer of Fear. How's that? Was that good?
You need to just move on.
Summer of Fear.
We'll just move on.
I'm going to move on.
Move on.
All right, so they're calling this summer the Summer of Fear, and, I mean, really, it's not anything new. It's just, I mean, well, actually, it looks like they're releasing a shit ton more than they normally release on a monthly basis. So, I'm just going to rattle off what they have on the docket here, and then, Brad, you can point out any ones that we should... Because you know more than me, things that we should probably be paying attention to.
Will do.
All right. So for the month of May, we have Final Exam, Evil Speak, Nosferatu, House in the Valley, and then Sleepaway Camp Collector's Edition. And then we move into June, which is a kind of a lighter month. We got Ravenous and The Monkey's Paw. And then in July, The Final Terror, Lake Placid, CG Crocodile, or Alligator, Deadly Eyes, Ginger Snaps, and then August, they close out the Summer of Fear with Phantom of the Paradise, Motel Hell, Leviathan, The Legend of Hell House, Dog Soldiers, and Without Warning.
Right, so, and the one that you left out, and, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast and you're up to date, Hellhole has been kind of postponed because something's going on with the film elements. I'm guessing that something's fucked up, basically. So that one's still kind of on hold. I really, 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 really hope that's one they can release. I don't know if it's good or not. I've just never seen it, and I like when Scream Factory releases shit that I haven't seen.
And it's called Hellhole, which is one of my favorite Spinal Tap songs of all time.
Boom.
So is there any ones on there that we should probably be paying attention to when I go down the list? Like which of these kind of stand out to you?
The biggest one personally for me, and I think that deserves kind of the big re-release, it did see a DVD at one time, but Final Exam is one of my favorite slashers. You know, I have probably about 10 favorite slashers, I would say, and Final Exam is one of those films. It has it's special to me because at that point in time that I watched it, it does a few things different than your normal college, high school, you know, backwoods. I mean, it's none of those. It's college. But those slashers had. And it was just a little odd to me. There's just a few little things that stick out in the movie, and we'll discuss that because I definitely won't forget. discuss that when the time releases. But yeah, final exam is a big one for me. Of course, Ginger Snaps, that it has a huge following, and I'm really excited they're doing that. Dog Soldiers deserves a decent release other than the shitty Blu-ray that was already out.
Totally.
Ravenous is going to be a great one, which I love that Scream Factory picked that up because it always kind of had a horror feel to it.
I love Ravenous, yeah.
And it's just a legitimately, like, really great film. And I think one of the other contemporary releases, or two, you said, well, Monkey's Paw and is it House in the Alley is what it's called?
Yeah, it's
House in the Alley.
House in the Alley. And this one's only getting a DVD release, which I found kind of odd. And I tweeted at Scream Factory and asked them, you know, if there was any reason why. And it basically it just boiled down to money. I think it's a foreign film, if I'm correct.
Yeah, it's I believe it's either Japanese or Korean, maybe.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Usually with sometimes with foreign distribution with newer films, they can only sometimes release on certain formats. It's bizarre. That's what I've heard. I'm not 100% like that's the case with this one. But yeah, funky things go on with foreign distribution, which will be fun to talk to whenever the Battery hits, because I know there was some crazy stuff with the Battery being released in other countries, which we'll of course discuss that.
Yeah,
you know, time. That's not in their Summer of Fear. That's not. Whoops, I almost let it slip. that has not. Set date have been released
yet. They have not. No.
I cannot say it.
We're assuming it's not going to be released this summer. So
no, it will not be.
We're assuming maybe fall or winter release on that one. But yeah, I'm excited for the Battery to come out. And you were telling me, like, what was the, was it in Germany? What was the name?
Yeah, I was on a website just checking out other countries' releases. And there's a Steelbook going to be released in Germany called Ben and Mickey versus the Dead or Zombies. And I was like, what the, like how much, it was almost like, sometimes, when you look at like, Japanese translations for movies that, you know, go, you know, from here to go over there, like they'll just flat out, like basically the title will be the plot. And it's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, why can't they just keep, you know, the original title, they just basically spell it out. I wish I could remember what Fast and the Furious was. Gosh, it was something so goofy.
Yeah.
I almost want to say Turbo was in the name, but it was just like, you know, and you'll see that every once in a while. It's really fun. If you guys already don't know, I mean, I'm sure Sean does cause he has it up all the time. IMDb, if you go to alternate titles, you'll see some funny shit. Like, look up any movie when you can do it on your app. Just look up alternate titles, and sometimes you'll just see some really funny shit.
Can I sidebar here about IMDb?
Oh God, yes, sure, Sean.
Because I get a lot of shit when I'm looking up IMDb. And is this a film thing, like an elitist thing where you're not allowed to go to IMDb because you're supposed to already know the shit? Or is IMDb just not reliable?
No. IMDb is reliable. I mean, I get a lot of information from my IMDb too. I don't want to come off in the past podcasts as an elitist because I'm not at all. I do know a lot, but I don't think I know more than your average person. There's plenty of people out there that have more knowledge than I do. The whole thing with my thing with IMDb. I don't know. It's kind of like people, like you could tell when people are reading from a screen,
right? Yeah.
And when that happens, it's like, I don't know. It just kind of throws me off because, you know, it's like, you know, reading a speech or, you know, you're looking down at a paper, reading it, rather than just bringing up in conversation. I don't know. I won't call you out anymore, Sean. I'm sorry I hurt your feelings.
No, it's fine. I just want to make sure that I'm playing by the rules, you know. That's all.
I mean, who gives a shit? I mean, if it's information and, you know, it's knowledge about a film or, you know, because, I mean, obviously I mean, yeah, if you sit around all day and watch movies and pay attention to every single crew member and you can tell me, you know, the director of photography on, you know, Evil Speak and tell me everything that he's ever done, I really don't give a shit. Like, if you're looking that up, you know, on IMDb while it's happening, yeah, I mean, that's fine, because I would have to, too. I'm not going to remember that. I mean, watch it be somebody fucking popular. But, you know, I do pay attention to certain things like that. But, I mean, you have your people that, you know, really, really, really get into every minor detail on a movie. I try to retain movie information, you know, maybe funny things. You know, if it's really important for a certain cinematographer, or if the cinematographer is really good for cinematography, I will look it up on IMDb, and I'll put that in my brain.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just not one to, like, look it up during conversation, because it's almost like if you were having a conversation one-on-one with somebody and they, like, pull out their phone and you're both looking at and talking about movies by looking at IMDb, it's kind of like, what the fuck are you doing? Just don't you have any information retained in your brain to actually have a conversation without looking at the app?
I use IMDb as like the last resource. Like, I'll be talking to somebody and we'll be in conversation and we're both, what is that actor's name? Sit there and just try to think of it. And it's last.
That's completely fine.
Yeah. If you can't think of it, consult IMDb. But no, I totally get you. And, you know, on the show, that we did with, Travis Stevens, of course, when it boils down to us, all of us looking and reading off IMDb, I get it. But we did it for comedic effect, of course.
Yeah. That was funny. Cause I mean, you guys started talking about Bill Pope. You know, and shit like that. You know, yeah, I mean, it's fine. I mean, it gives sense to the show. I mean, because, I mean, honestly, your average person, even the people that listen to the show that are they're horror nerds, you know, you can learn something always from IMDb, and it is educational. And I use it all the time. I use it every day. I just don't read from it when I'm on a podcast. Yeah.
I do, and I apologize. No, all right, let's...
Taking a drink.
the movies I'm gonna go the movies that I'm kind of like really psyched about are I'm gonna name off really quickly. I'm actually really excited for Nosferatu, and that's the 1977 version.
My guy that I don't like is in that movie, because yeah. I haven't seen the 77 Nosferatu. I've only seen, of course, the original,
right?
And then the Nicolas Cage director, right? Shadow of a Vampire, which was kind of like on that base, of the story.
Yeah, I like Shadow of the Vampire a lot, and
deserves a decent release. I mean, it was on some fucking clamshell DVD back in the day.
Oh, I know, it hasn't come to Blu-ray yet either.
It's one of those films that easily was dismissed. And no one ever speaks about it. And sometimes I bring it up in conversation when people like put down Nicolas Cage or, you know, talk about how crazy he is. I'm like, dude, did you ever see fucking Shadow of the Vampire, which he directed?
Yeah,
hardly anybody knows.
He directed that, huh?
Yeah, I'm almost
positive. Are we sure? No. Calling you on that.
Nicolas Cage didn't direct it?
Produced by Nicolas Cage.
Oh, dude, I just got shut down. Did you look it up on IMDb?
Wikipedia, bitches.
Who directed it?
E. Elias Merhig.
Wow. Oh, Nicolas Cage was in it, right?
No, he just produced it. John Malkovich, Willem Dafoe, Udo Kier, Cary Elwes. But anyway, I mean, the movie starts out with a line.
I just got shut down.
The movie starts out with John Malkovich saying, "Nice pussy, nice pussy." So a movie that starts out like that, I'm in. He's talking about a cat.
My Nicolas Cage mistake isn't as bad as your Island 1997 bullshit.
No, I know.
Well, right. We all make mistakes.
Hey,
we all make mistakes. I only do.
And I make a lot of them, and, you know, it just goes with the territory with me.
And it proves that horror nuts and movie nerds don't know everything, right? They don't.
Well, yeah. I mean, I used to know a lot, and then I had kids, and then all this information's spilling out, then all I know about is, like, you know, Curious George and Elmo. So, you know, I'm trying to retain it, people. I'm trying. But Shadow of the Vampire, I would love to see a nice Blu-ray release of that. So if any of you are listening and you're in charge of acquisitions for any sort of company, please, Shadow of the Vampire, Scream Factory. If you guys can do that, that'd be great. All right. You know, I'm going to bring this up real quick. If it has to be annoying to work for Scream Factory just because the amount of people each day saying, you should release this. You should release this. It would drive me bananas.
Yeah, it's surprise. I mean, obviously those guys have enough on their plate and they're probably stressed out most of the time anyway. But I mean, it's got to be one of those things where, well, I mean, it's a little bit different for me because I did discuss a little while ago with a friend of mine about starting kind of a distribution company. It was just in talks for a little bit. And, it was just kind of like brought up, but it wasn't like really serious, but I took it seriously. So I like researched every film possibly I could to find out who owned the rights. So it's sometimes, I think you'll notice, I'll jump in on conversations, when people ask Scream Factory a question, release this. And I'm like, yeah, that's probably gonna happen, cause if they're not releasing shit from, Lionsgate, they're definitely not going to get, Lionsgate time. Because if anybody doesn't know, Lionsgate bought a shit ton of companies early 90s. They were just a small little place, Lionsgate over there, if you remember what their logo looked like. And they had direct-to-video movies mostly.
Their logo used to be awesome.
Yeah, well, I said direct-to-video movies, but direct-to-video, DTV stuff. They just bought out like tons of companies, and they own the rights to so much. And I really, really wish they would dig into their vault and start releasing things on Blu-ray. They've done a few DVDs here and there, but Scream Factory, definitely. I would love to see them get in that vault. I know they're in MGM's, of course, because that's where most of their movies come from. And I think they've got a couple from Universal, mm-hmm. I want to say.
Yeah.
Universal's pretty lenient on their stuff, especially with things so old.
Yeah.
But, I'm sure Scream Factory does use it to their advantage. Obviously, if there's 10,000 people that request, Without Warning, which was one that they released, announced the other day. That's going to be a good move for them, especially mm-hmm. since that movie never went on DVD and VHS in the US, just in the UK. That's an odd one. Are you having too much alcohol? Because I got to take another drink.
I'm actually really excited about Without Warning. I've never seen it. I've heard a lot about it, and it looks batshit crazy, which of course, as you know, is my thing. I look for batshit crazy stuff. But the other ones that I'm of course excited for, Sleepaway Camp is a given. Ravenous, I'm super excited for because I can't wait to do our show on that, because that'll be a ton of fun. Because I remember that on Twitter, I think somebody had started up like a petition for
Scott Weinberg.
Scott Weinberg started up a petition for Ravenous, and of course I jumped on that. And Ravenous is a flick.
We should have him on the show.
We should. But that one, I just based off the I saw Guy Pearce was in it, and Guy Pearce fan of course. And this was back. I rented it on VHS. Back in college, and I mean, that movie blew me away, and I was like, how come nobody, why doesn't anyone else really know about this movie? It's such a crazy movie.
Yeah.
A brutal movie, a weird movie, but like something definitely, I was surprised that didn't really take off like mainstream. Maybe because it was such, it deals with cannibalism, I don't know, but the movie is awesome, and I'm really excited to, and it's never had a decent like DVD release. The DVD was, it was non-anamorphic, right? So it was just a shitty DVD. So
I bought it and I think only watched it like once.
I bought it, saw that it was non-anamorphic, and I returned it. So I'm dying to watch this movie again in HD. Other flicks that I'm excited for, Lake Placid has a special place in my heart. Ginger Snaps, of course, excited about that one. I'm really excited about checking out Phantom of the Paradise, which is a early Brian De Palma, like, rock musical film, which is just crazy. I've never heard of it until I saw it.
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
Paul Williams did the music for that. And Paul Williams did a lot of scores and a lot of music for a little while. He had a really good run. And then there's actually a documentary for even horror fans would love it. Anybody would love it. It's a wonderful documentary. It's called Paul Williams is Still Alive. And it came out a couple years ago. And it was his basically career and what he did during the break. And it's just this fan that follows him around. And it is fucking hilarious. But it's also very... very moving. It's a very, very good documentary. But yeah, he did the music for Phantom of the Paradise, and I'm super excited about it too, which is also getting I think it's already out, or Arrow already released that or something.
Yeah, I'm excited about checking that one out for sure. I mean, rock opera stuff, like, I'm a huge music geek, so anything involving music, I'm great. I'm excited about.
Have a podcast for about music.
I should have a podcast called Music. Actually, I do. It's called The Geek Couch Backstage Pass, and you all should check it out because no one does. Go to thegeekcouch.com and check that out. Anyway, the other ones that I'm excited about, Leviathan. I love, like, underwater horror type flicks. Like, I love Leviathan, The Abyss, and Deep Star 6 are probably, like, my top three underwater movies. So I'm excited for that to come out. And of course, Peter Weller's in it. So, I mean, come on. And then of course, Dog Soldiers, you know, getting a collector's edition. And I'm really pumped about that. So that's my, like, excited about list. If you're excited about The Summer of Fear as well, and there are some on here that you love, drop us a line. Go to thescreamcast.com, click on contact, and send us an email on, you know, your favorite couple movies and why, and we'll read it on the show if we get an email.
Or you can also tell us what you would like to see on Blu-ray, and we can have that conversation.
That would be great, yeah.
And then I can tell you no, that will not be released.
You can say no. You know, I was on the Scream Factory's Facebook page, and there's a guy on there. I'm trying to find his name right now, but that dude is, like, all over it. He knows, like, the ins and outs on what will be released and what won't. Cause people will always, on their Facebook posts, every now and then they'll say, hey, what do you want? What would you like to be released? They'll be like, hey, we have a surprise announcement coming out. What do you think it is? And so people will put down, like, what they think it is. And there's one dude on there that is just on the ball. Like crazy. So, you know, cheers to you, whoever you are. Way to be on the ball with that stuff. I'm still holding out for The Keep. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with that.
It's a hard one, dude. Paramount.
Mm-hmm. Toast to The Keep. May that someday come to Blu-ray. Because I love it.
Drink
time. Let's go ahead and we'll take a quick break, and then we'll jump back in and talk about Beneath, Larry Fessenden's latest film. This band is, I'm a huge fan of them. They're called Dikembe, and they have a 7-inch, coming out soon, and they just released a song. The song is called Healer of the Pride off this 7-inch. You're listening to The Screamcast.
Talking to the person that you
That was Healer of the Pride by Tekembe. It's coming off a 7-inch that will be released in May on Tiny Engines Records. And they have an LP coming out this summer on Tiny Engine Records, so keep your eye out for that. Really cool band. I really dig them, and I hope you guys dig them too. So
their name is Dikembe, like the basketball player Dikembe Mutombo?
Yes. Actually.
Neat. Is he in the band?
I wish. That would be amazing.
That wasn't a yes or no, Sean. I'm serious.
He's not in the band, Brad.
Damn it.
All right. Here we go. This is our first contemporary release that we're talking about, and this is actually the newest release that we've actually, you know, got around to covering. We're hoping to do this more often, and as things release, we're hoping to cover them. We'll see what happens. It all depends on if we get them in time. If Amazon keeps up their Prime deal with me, we'll be talking about these as soon as they come out. We'll see what happens. They just raised it to $99, so a year, so I don't know.
All right.
So Beneath is the latest movie by Larry Fessenden. Of course, he is known for Wendigo and
The Last Winter,
starring Ron Perlman.
And a movie called Habit that's actually pretty good.
Yes. I haven't seen Wendigo, but I've seen The Last Winter, and I really dug The Last Winter. I mean, I'll watch anything pretty much Ron Perlman's in. But the cover art was pretty interesting, just a frozen dead body in a, you know, just a sea of white. And I'm a huge fan of The Thing, so anything like in the snow, I'll take a look. I like most of the movie. It kind of falls apart when the CG elements are introduced, and it's a budgetary thing. I get it, but in horror movies especially, I kind of find that like CG effects in horror flicks they immediately take me out of the movie. You can have fake rubbery effects, you can have puppets, all that kind of stuff. I'm in. Real fake blood, all that stuff. I will take it. I'll believe it. But once you show like CG blood, especially, and then CG creatures, if it's not done right, and I'm not saying all CG creatures are bad. I mean, you know, that's not the case at all. But immediately when I see bad CG in a movie, it takes me out, and it kind of bums me out. You know, I wish they would try to stick with physical effects as much as possible. But I get how the environment is, you know, budgetary constraints and things like that. But I really dug the movie. You've seen Wendigo, right?
Yeah, I've seen The Last Winter, which I was, you know, it was okay. I mean, I love Fessenden. He's like one of those. It's like a grandpa in horror films. Mm-hmm. I'm glad he's finally starting to get his, get up there, because he's been in. People don't know he's the voice of, I believe the character is Frank in The Battery. He was the voice of that. He was in Chad Kinkle's film called Jugface. It was really good. He's of course in Your Next. You know, he's the neighbor in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So he's starting to, you know, get up there again, and I'm glad that Scream Factory, you know, picked up his newest flick, which I don't consider his best. I consider maybe Habit one of his best. Wendigo, Last Winter, and Beneath. I'm sure I'm missing one. I probably haven't seen it. I just don't know.
Was he in I Sell the Dead? Was he an actor in that?
Yeah, I believe he was. Yeah, he's in a lot of shit. He's one of those people where you maybe mention the name. I'm not speaking to the horror community because most know who he is. But, you know, if you say Larry Fessenden, probably people wouldn't be able to know. But if you show his face, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, that guy. He plays the nutty guy in that movie.
I mean, the guy is a workhorse. The guy, he's always working, you know.
Yeah, and no, he has his own company, the Glass Eye Picks, you know. Mm-hmm. He's writing, he's producing, he's, you know, directing when he can. He acts. I mean, he's an all around, like, he's a hard worker, and I think a lot of that plays into what we'll talk about when we start getting into speaking about Beneath, because he definitely heard your outcry of CGI, because There's very, 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 very little CG in Beneath, which was very, very exciting, especially with, you know, if you take, go back to, you know, just say 1997, I think it's probably when Anaconda came out with Island, John. Island around that time. But, you know, we had Anaconda, we had, you know, Lake Placid, and then after those films, we had a wave of animal attack movies. I mean, animal attack movies have always been big, and they've always existed since, you know, fucking, you know, the 50s and 60s. There's even a movie with, like, giant rabbits or something that kill people. But anyways.
I was in Walmart today, and I saw something called, like, Cyborg Frog or something, so.
Yeah, it's like, you know, now they're splicing, you know, because at first it's like, you know, Python came out, then Boa versus Python, and then, you know, Sharktopus and Sand Sharks, Sharknado. I mean, they're just, I mean, obviously most of those films are, you know, complete throwaway and are only made for certain reasons and not the aspect of art. Sorry.
Yeah, well,
but it's true.
The boobs in Python made my parents turn it off as soon as we started watching it.
Nice. That sucks.
I got it as a, they actually bought it for me as a Christmas present. And
that's a terrible Christmas present.
They didn't realize, I guess, that the movie begins with a glorious shot of breasts. And
that sounds good.
I
haven't seen it in a while. I know they made a sequel to it too.
Well, I had to throw away my Christmas present. This is what happens, you know, when you're raised in a Christian family.
And I think we're the only two people in the world that actually spoke about Python for that amount of time.
I think so.
But anyways, what I was getting at is that there's a wave of those movies, and most of them, even your bigger budget ones, your smaller budgets, have so much CG when the, you know, the animal, the reptile, you know, the fish, whatever the fuck it is moving. You know, it's all CG, and we only get, you know, maybe like a stock shot of, like, you know, a crocodile or, you know, a fucking frog or whatever it is. And when there's any action sequences, it's you know, computer animated.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing about Beneath that I will give strong props to is that it is a legit fish. It's real life. This fish existed, right?
It's awesome. It's awesome. Yeah. So Beneath was...
I was actually saying it was like a live fish, John. That joke went over your head. Sorry.
Sorry. It's the rum. It is the rum. Beneath, basically the plot is six high school seniors celebrating, you know, graduation, decide to go on an excursion to across the lake to drink and party. And, of course, they get stuck in the middle of the lake, and there's a man-eating fish.
Yeah. We're going to have to try to stay strong, spoiler-free on this one.
We probably should.
We should try it. Yeah, definitely try it.
So that's my commitment to you, dear people, dear listeners, is to keep this spoiler-free. I think we can.
I think it's very possible. You know, like Sean said, it has a, you know, a plot that, you know, I guess you'd say that it's fitting to your, you know, your monster, your 80s monster movies, you know, where it's just a group of kids going out to have fun, and then they, you know, end up getting attacked by whatever it may be. This time it's a fish. So there's not much to it on that at that point, but I, you know, getting into, you know, talking about it, while watching the movie and after it's over, there's so much more to this movie than what we're shown. This film is very, very shallow because it hints at certain things throughout the film. You know, like this is without giving anything away, spoiler free, guys. our main character that's introduced in the beginning, we see a newspaper of an event that happened. And, you know, it kind of does a close up, but it never actually goes back into detail of what happened to our character without going any more. There are certain things that happen in the movie where it's like, what the fuck? Like, was this supposed to be like an extra hour or something? Like, why aren't you going into detail on certain things? Because there's more than that, more things that happen in that film. And it's just extremely, like, it just touches the surface.
Yeah.
and doesn't go beneath the surface. You're welcome, guys. And it's a little upsetting, and I blame that a lot on you know, because I thought Fessin did a good job. The fish looks great. You know, his team that did the fish looks great.
Yeah.
But this script that we have for Beneath is very, very amateur. It's an amateur thing, and it's hard to believe that Fessenden didn't, you know, want to go into more detail on certain things, because the openings are there. They're shown.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of have a complex – we do, like, really, like – I'm going to say it again. Beneath, we have a very complex story.
Yep.
In a way, we have many things that could be turning points and certain aspects and certain just items where you're like, holy shit. And it's like, god damn it. Like, I understand, like, you're just – maybe that was kind of just like opening things up here or there. But I hated how they didn't go into more detail on that.
Yeah, it was written by Tony Daniel and Brian Smith, and Fessenden was hired by Chiller TV. This was a Chiller TV flick, and I've actually, until recently, have never really heard of Chiller TV. I don't. I have cable, but I don't pay a lot of attention to cable, and I think Monkey's Paw is a Chiller TV release as well. If I'm right,
which is written by Macon Blair, who little plug here for these guys. Macon Blair wrote it, and he might be in it too. I'm not too familiar with the Monkey's Paw just yet, but Macon Blair also was in, and I think he probably co-wrote a film, hilarious film called Murder Party, and
awesome.
and a new film coming out on demand, which was my number one of last year. My number one film was not a horror film. It was called Blue Ruin, and it's going to be on demand in April. And he wrote Monkey's Paw, so I'm pretty stoked about that.
Cool. Are you familiar with Chiller TV at all, or
a little bit?
A little bit.
I've been anti-cable for about 10 years. I have not had a cable box in my house. I just do, you know, streaming and, you know, buying, you know, physical releases. But yeah, I know what it is, but I don't watch it.
Yeah. So I mean, Larry Fessenden's acting as a hired gun here. You know, they give him a paycheck, direct this movie, we have the script. So the thing is, I don't know if there was anything in the budget for him to do kind of a polish on the script. So he's given the script, and it's okay. You know, and it hints at things. Gosh, we're always going to be doing this, no pun intended, beneath the surface of psychological thriller, which I feel like this is almost why he took the gig, was he saw that there was some sort of psychological, you know, kind of horror going on here with these people stuck in the middle of the lake. And it's not necessarily as a whole about the fish. The fish is just a catalyst to kind of bring out all the ugliness in these characters as they're, it's a take on Lifeboat, and, you know, Lifeboat mixed with Jaws, mixed with Sharknight 3D, right? Am I wrong? With kind of stock stereotypical characters, you got the movie geek, you got the jocks, right? Two brothers, the jocks, you got the blonde bombshell, who's curvy, by the way, and I appreciate that. And then you have the mysterious kind of loner, and then one other girl who is expendable.
Well, who is actually, I believe, you might have to look this up on IMDb, but I remember the name. She's she was the little girl in that show.
That one show.
Seventh Heaven.
Mackenzie Roseman?
Yeah, I think she was right. A little... Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's the little girl in... which grew up to be fairly attractive.
Yes, she did, and she's pretty great, you know. And the thing is, like, all the actors, I feel like, are bringing everything to the table.
No, that's one thing that I believe we even spoke about. The actors, they're decent actors.
Yeah,
they're good actors, but their script that they were working with wasn't. you know, and they gave it all. And it, at times it almost seems there's a couple moments where they do, it feels like they're overacting. They're overselling it. But I just, it's one of those things where I think they even knew that there's so much more to this script. And it almost seemed like that it was written as a Killer Fish movie. But with the people that they had behind it, they knew that there was more to it. Mm-hmm. And it just, it, like I said, like I can't stress enough, they just did not hit the right mark on a lot of things in this movie. And I don't know who's to blame.
Yeah.
Because Fessenden's a good director. He knows what he's doing. So he's not an amateur. I'm just going to have to blame the script on this one, because everybody else does, you know. It almost seems like, you know, when you hear about it and you start watching it, you're like, damn, this is going to be probably a really good movie, especially when you find out the fucking fish is, you know, all animatronic and the fucking scuba divers underneath controlling the fish and shit, you know. And once it dives into it, you every turning point, like, it's like almost every 15 minutes I felt, I'm like, okay, we're going to go, it's going to get more. But it didn't. It just kept on backing up. And doing the same thing over and over and over, and like you said, everybody's an asshole. It's like all these kids are assholes, but they're not in the beginning. And it's like no one there is that change where everybody turns into an asshole, mm-hmm. but there's no character development in this movie at all. Like, they were assholes before they were on that boat. We just put them in a tough situation, and they just showed their true colors.
Yeah, and that's one of the criticisms that I've heard a lot about this movie is, like, you know, you're not really rooting for anyone. Like, everyone's kind of, in one way or another, a douchebag in some sort of, you know, some way. But I kind of...
You're not even rooting for the fish.
No, you're not. But I kind of counter that with, like, do you guys remember high school? Like... You know, like, half the people I knew were friggin' douchebags.
Right, but you weren't friends with them going on a fucking boat either.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I felt could have been explained in the script was, why are these people kind of hanging out? Like, they're obviously not, like, best friends, but maybe, you know.
But that's how it's kind of perceived, though, and it's an almost intentional, because as soon as we see, I mean, you don't even have to have the characters say a line of dialogue. If you have six people in a car with video cameras, you know, immediately we're going to think that they're friends.
Yeah.
And as soon as they start talking and they're joking, you know, and I understand there's like subtle hints in the beginning that, you know, there's somewhat animosity between certain people. And there is. I mean, it's said in the very beginning that certain characters have, you know, animosity towards one another, and that gives the movie more power. I don't care. Like, you can be best friends with somebody and still hate them for something.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that exists, and that's a real life thing. But not, it's just like, you just don't have that many people, and just have the, you know, the arguments and the hatred towards one another so quickly, because I mean, this movie's short, you know, and we just have things spiral directly out of control so quickly without really any explanation. It's just to do it because they're assholes is not a good enough excuse. Like, people can be assholes, you have an asshole in every movie, but not all your characters are dick faces.
Well,
you know
what I kind of read into, and this is me reading into the script, right? Like, we shouldn't have to read this far into it. Like, possibly they were all kind of childhood friends. You know, they grew up together. They knew each other like really well. Maybe they weren't the closest friends in high school, but this was kind of like their last hurrah because of graduating. They were going to kind of go out with a bang and put things aside. And since they grew up together, you know, like, it would make sense that they would do something like this. But that, of course, is not explained at all in the script.
No, it's not.
I just kind of placed that on it because I think back to my high school days and stuff like that. Like, yeah, I would probably try to hang out with kind of my childhood friends, people that I grew up with one more time. But of course, that's not explained at all in the script. So I'm putting that from my experiences, I'm putting that into the movie here. So you're wondering, like, why are all these people, like, why are they hanging out? Like, are they really going to have, like, you know, are they really going to have a great time? there's all these like secrets and things that kind of sort of seem to come out of nowhere just because the script wants kind of an aha moment or just something for them to do. Cause I mean, they're stuck on this boat in the middle of a lake. Now, we talked about this, you know, before the show when we were kind of discussing the film briefly, but, if any of you have ever been in a lake, you know that at one point or another, you're going to drift to one side of the lake.
Yeah. Right. And that's another, like, logistically, there are a few things. It's like this movie takes place over a few hours. And if you're in a boat, I don't get, and you can blame it on, like, there's people that standing up for the film that, you know, blame it on weight. It doesn't matter. There's fucking cruise ships. They fucking drift. You know, and with this, and the thing is, we're not in the middle of a lake. We're almost like in the middle of a fucking pond.
It's a pond.
And we see both sides,
yeah,
of land when we're in the middle of the boat with them.
About 360 degrees, you can see the bank,
yeah,
all the way around.
And it's like, okay, like, I understand, like, you know, my suspension of disbelief that, you know, they're supposed to be on this lake, they're supposed to be sitting there, but if you're showing me the bank in every fucking shot, and you have these people paddling, like, with no end, your current's going to push you. Your current doesn't push the middle of the goddamn lake and keep you there. It's going to push you to one side or to another. And it really frustrated me, along with other things. But that was just a little minor detail.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're in the middle of fucking lake. it doesn't make a bit of sense.
I think this is one of those movies that definitely you can nitpick to death, for sure.
Yeah.
But
what I'm saying. It felt like amateurs. I know Fessenden's not an amateur at all. He's a really good director. And it's just like, you know, if that's right, if it was for a paycheck, then it was for a paycheck. But if you put your name on something, you want it to be your best and be all.
Yeah, and he's definitely being used as kind of the selling point of the movie. But I mean, all that aside, like, and that's the thing that I feel like you can kind of tell the difference between you and me. Like, you're a writer, you know what I mean? You write way more than I do. I'm a very visual person. So
yeah.
I kind of push the script aside. Like, as a whole, like, I kind of dug the movie mainly because of that fish. Like, I am so sick of bullshit CGI in so many movies. And even in, like, you know, Lake Placid, right? Like, that's my biggest problem with Lake Placid is the freaking CGI alligator, right? But, or crocodile, whatever the hell the thing is, okay? But
pretty sure it's a crocodile.
I don't know. But this movie, I latched on to how great the fish looked. And the first reveal of the fish when it comes out of the water, like, its toothy mouth, like, you know, comes out of the water.
Yeah.
You know, after our little Seventh Heaven friend. Like, I was, you know, I really dug that scene and how that played out. And then all throughout the movie, as it's kind of swimming around and everything, like, you know, I really dug how they did it. So I kind of put a lot of the script stuff aside. And I really, for the most part, you know, really liked the movie. So I think how you gauge this movie depends on where you're coming from, on how you enjoy movies. I enjoy things on a far more visual level. I think it's the first thing that I look at is the visuals, and does it all kind of sort of work? Great. Yeah, it looked great. But if you're someone who really pays attention to the writing, you're definitely going to find a lot of holes and a lot of problems with this movie. But that said, you know, if we look at all the contemporary releases that Scream Factory has given us thus far, you know, I think that Beneath is their first kind of solid contemporary movie. Yeah, it's not the greatest, but it sure as hell is better than anything they've given us so far. I mean, what are the other contemporary flicks they've given us?
They gave us Dead Souls, mm-hmm, which, you know, is not all that great at all. And we recently had, after this, Dead Shadows comes out, which I've seen, and Dead Shadows is just, I mean, it's a total, like, made-for-TV sci-fi you know, CGI fuck fest.
Yeah.
And it is very, very disappointing because it's a creature feature, you know, and like Sean said in the beginning, that creature features, especially like in horror films, once you reveal that monster and shit, like, you know, it's almost to the point of like, you know, back in the day when we watched movies from the 80s, we wouldn't see the monster until like the last 30 minutes or something. Yeah. People should take note and start doing that shit again if they have a CGI monster, because I don't want to see that shit all through the movie. You know, and that's one, like, you're right. I mean, with Beneath, like, it looks good. The film itself, you know, it's very colorful. It has like a very wet tone to it. Like, it feels like we're in the middle of a lake, and I really like that. Like, everybody looks kind of muggy. Mm-hmm. Everybody looks like they've been on the lake for a little bit. And I think that was very, very well done. The fish, it looks great. The way it moves, you know, is very impressive. Because there's also, which we'll get into, special features. There's a nice little, like, special, like a little documentary, or I guess more or less behind the scenes footage of, like, the fish and, like, what you see. Like, sometimes, when I was even watching it, I was like, oh, okay, that's obviously, you know, practical effects. And I'm like, oh, they'd probably use CG on that. But no, they didn't.
No.
Like, there's so many sequences where you can look at it and be like, your normal film would use CGI effects, and this one did not. There's a couple moments where they might have, because it looks a little wonky, but for the most part, I think 95% of it was all practical, and that is a highlight to the movie, and that is a big selling point, and that's what definitely got me excited. But my problem was that script, and you mentioned this. I wanted to jump in, but I didn't want to interrupt you. Is that, you know, you mentioned about the kids, you know, about the kids just going across the lake, you know, to drink and have one last, you know, all out thing. Well, we have six kids on this boat. We have one small cooler of beer and we have little bags of chips.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing too much on this last all blowout. I'm not saying that as target, like, you know, you're wrong for thinking that, which that's what you thought. But all in all, after the movie's over, spoiler free, there's another reason they're on that goddamn lake, but they never got into it.
Yeah.
And that's what really pissed me off.
Right. Yeah.
And after you watch it, tweet me, direct message me, friend me, find me on Facebook and talk to me about it. Because I'm sure there's many other people who would be like, bullshit. They're not doing that for that reason. They're on that lake for another reason, and by God, they didn't get into it, and that's what really, really pissed me off about this movie.
Yeah, there's an underlying plot point that's kind of abandoned halfway through the movie.
And they hint at it like three fucking times throughout the movie, and it's like, God damn it.
And they never
go there. But you had that goddamn film geek.
Yeah.
And that's definitely one. If you put a film geek in your fucking horror film, you are fucked. The only time that actually worked was in Scream.
Right.
Because it was new. Scream was self-aware. There were things. We were watching a movie within a movie within a movie, it seemed. And it was fun. It was new. So stop fucking trying to copy Scream. Stop putting movie geeks and be, you know, like, oh, this is where somebody says, get the hell out of here. This is where somebody says, what the fuck am I doing? This is where somebody – no, stop it. It's not funny. And don't ever, ever write in your screenplay. This goes for any writers. Do not write in your screenplay and reference Shark Night 3D.
Do not.
They do that in this movie, and it doesn't make Shark any goddamn sense. Number one, there's not that many people that saw Shark Night 3D. And for the two people to see this movie, I mean, you do have your horror geeks that saw it, and there's no laughter. It's just like, why the fuck would you mention Shark Night 3D?
Well, he was mentioning it because haven't you seen that, you know, there's monsters in freshwater lakes? That's what he was trying to.
No, I got the joke.
To get at.
It wasn't funny. You know, but.
Yeah, I couldn't believe they mentioned Shark Night 3D. Never do that again.
Don't do that. And that's another thing, just a tidbit, well, I'll hit really quick. Don't date your movie.
Right, exactly.
You date your movie, you mention think about movies that mention MySpace and Friendster and LiveJournal. Like, they're dated, you know, and that's the same thing with, like, fucking Facebook. People are like, Facebook's gonna... No, Facebook will go away. Trust me. At some point in time, it's gonna go away.
Yep.
I don't care how many billions of dollars Mark Jesse Eisenberg has, but, you know, Zuckerberg. you know, he just, like, it's one of those things where, you know, your movie's dated, you know, and it's just don't do it, because it dates it.
Who in 10 years is gonna know what the hell Shark Knight 3D was? No one. No one.
I mean, you're definitely gonna have your audience, like, people like me that knows what Shark Knight 3D is. But, you know, unless it's like a plug, because they know the dudes that did, which, I mean, that's, here we go. The director of Shark Knight 3D is, you know, passed away last year, which is sad.
I wasn't going to bring it up. I was avoiding it.
Damn it.
It's bound to happen every episode, people. Someone is dead.
Yeah. I'm really glad we stopped talking about teeth, though, because that was starting to get on my nerves, Sean. So I'm glad you haven't brought up teeth.
I do have an issue with the fish's teeth, because those aren't practical at all.
No?
No! How the heck is that thing going to chew anything? There's no way. They're all jutting out everywhere.
I'm glad you actually brought this up, because hearing from people from Facebook and Twitter, and, you know, just reading, you know, sporadic reviews here or there.
You're dating the podcast, Brad. You're dating the podcast.
People have complained about the fish, about the way it looks, about its teeth. I'm just going to say one thing, and I hope I get the name of the fish right. Anglerfish. Mm. Look it up.
Okay.
Look how it looks.
Those things are fucking scary, by the way.
But, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Some fish, you know, it's like, you know, a crocodile, you know, or an alligator. You know, they bite down, they rip apart, and then they just fucking throw it in their mouth. Yeah. You know, I mean, yeah, I don't think that fish don't use their fucking, like, I mean, yeah, like small little teeth, like piranha. I mean, they bite and chew. But a fish like that, I just think it tries to grab shit whole. I don't have a problem with the fish's teeth. So fuck you. Fuck you, Sean.
You and I have dibs on a giant anglerfish movie, by the way.
Did you look up anglerfish? Is that what it is?
I know what an anglerfish is, and it can tie into an underwater Leviathan-like movie. Come on, let's do this.
There you go.
Abyss Boom. Meets the Leviathan meets Deep Star 6 with a fucking giant anglerfish. Let's do this.
Shark Knight 3D.
We can just call it Angler
3D.
3D. No, it'll be 4D by then. Have you heard about this bullshit? 4D theaters? Fuck you, 4D theaters. Okay?
I say fuck 3D.
Exactly, me too.
I say fuck 2D.
Not gonna go there. let's start wrapping up here. Let's go and like we mentioned, there is a making of documentary, and
that's really, really good,
really stinking good. And what I like about it is there's no talking heads. Like, you're just kind of there watching them make this movie.
Yeah, and it feels like you're part of the crew.
Exactly.
You know, and you actually get to see how shit's done from the ground up.
Yeah.
You get to see the boats, you know, they had like three boats of the same exact thing.
Yeah.
And you know, they had you know, like the unveiling of the fish for the first time, like after it's done. You get to see, like, you know, its insides, like all the kind of mechanical moving parts. Those are the types of, you know, on set behind the scenes shit that belong on every release of any movie, no, Scream Factory, no matter what, it doesn't matter. That kind of stuff is interesting because you feel like you're watching it, like, you know, your documentaries for 45 minutes. You just want to keep on going because you just like what you're seeing, whether the movie's bad or not.
Yeah.
Because I personally wasn't the biggest fan of Beneath, but there are a lot of good points to it.
Yeah.
But all in all, I would recommend Beneath? Question mark.
I think so.
But
I would.
It's cheap enough. It's cheap enough for a corny, cheesy monster movie, and it helps Scream Factory. And of course, this is a new movie by Fessenden, so fuck. Support indie film, indie filmmakers, because, you know, don't let people talk you out of shit. Watch it for yourself. Make your own decision. Beneath's not that bad of a movie.
No.
It has its flaws, but mostly all films, a lot of films have flaws. And sometimes you just have to look past them and try to look at the good points sometimes.
Yep.
I don't know the fuck I'm just rambling. Support fucking indie movies.
I agree.
That's what I'm trying to say.
I agree. And the hate that's been lobbed at this movie, I totally don't get. It's like, some critics have gone out of their way to just try to just bury this movie, and I really think it's not fair to the film itself.
It doesn't deserve it, no.
It doesn't deserve it. Like, everyone, like, nobody's just half-assing in here. Like, they definitely are.
The script.
I mean, everyone else involved, like, the production, as far as the production goes, like, everyone is out there, like, they're actually making an effort, right, to make a decent flick. And whether or not that sticks and that works or doesn't work, you know, it's all out there, you know, for you to see. And I definitely would check it out. At least if you can rent it, if you can stream this on...
It's available at Walmart. It's like one of the...
Walmart.
We should talk that. I think,
yeah, it's on DVD.
The very first... on Blu-ray?
No, I was actually at Walmart today, and they have just the DVD version, not the Blu-ray version.
But yeah, that's a big turning point, though. Screen Factory's getting their movies in Walmart now, which is a big thing. I don't know if people pay attention to that kind of stuff, but there's a lot of movies that don't make those points. You know, that they might be at your, you know, small independent record store or movie store, but to get something that wide is a big deal. And I'm happy to see, hopefully it's other titles and it's not the contemporary ones.
I hope so. And, you know, I noticed this today, because today I wanted to spend some money on a movie, damn it. I went out, I wanted to buy a movie, and I went to Target, I went to Best Buy, and then I went to Walmart. And these days, Walmart has the better selection. For some reason.
They do.
What the hell is going on, people?
I don't like to buy shit from Walmart.
Like, Target, it's
cheap,
like,
too.
Like, yeah, it's like $9.99 or $9.98 or something at Walmart for the DVD. But, like, I went to, like, Target scaled down their DVD section, like, just this weekend, and then Best Buy's been doing it. And then it seems like Walmart is, like, increasing their movie section.
Wait, Best Buy has movies?
Oh, they do? Hardly anymore. Like, I don't understand. Yeah. I was in Best Buy today, and I'm like, why the hell do I even go to Best Buy anymore?
Turn it into a fucking electronics store. That's all it is at this point.
God damn it. Pisses me off. Because, you know what? On my lunch breaks, people, I don't want to grab lunch. I don't want to go to Gorgino's sandwiches. I want to go look at movies.
That sounds really good. What do they have?
It's a really fucking good sandwich place. It's actually called Giovanni's, and they're awesome.
Yeah, I know. You're really, really bad at saying names.
I am. But the point is, like, I can't go and freaking browse movies anymore at the places that I normally visit. I gotta go to fucking Walmart and stand in line with 30 people on one register just to buy my 3-pack of Schwarzenegger, of Stallone flicks. Okay? Cobra.
About a 4-pack.
3-pack.
This individual.
Cobra,
directed by
Assassins.
George P. Cosmatos, directed Leviathan, that directed Unknown Origin, and Rambo 2, and Tombstone. No big deal.
Exactly. There's a 3-pack for $9.98. Cobra, The Specialist, and Assassins.
You know, Cobra is on Warner Brothers, but that deserves a Screen Factory release, because there's a lot of horror elements in Cobra, and I'm a big fan of that movie.
It has a laser gun, and if Eve of Destruction,
laser
freaking sighting gun, can get a release by Screen Factory, goddammit, Cobra can. All right. Let's get back to this DVD. We're running out of time here. People are probably sick of our jabbering, of our yapping. But there's also a commentary by Larry Fessenden and Graham Resnick.
Graham Resnick's the music guy.
Yeah, and I didn't get a chance to listen to the commentary, so I'm sorry. I have nothing to report.
I believe he did, the Innkeepers. He did the, sound design and music for the, or no, I guess it was just more sound design. You have to look that up.
Yeah.
I forget, but he's a talented dude.
Yeah, but I mean, the score for Beneath didn't really do a whole lot for me, though. But you know,
the score wasn't that big, but I thought the music that they used at times, I know there was like some complaints about that as well. I thought it was kind of like a, you know, felt off. But yeah. It was just like we're going to play this fucked up music in this fucked up situation because it's fucked up, you know. Yeah. And I thought that was pretty cool. But I'm a firm believer of using music like that at awkward moments. And we also talked about it during the island. It happened during the island too.
Yeah.
You know, where they're playing this like happy, jumpy music in this terrifying, terrible sequence. But it works. It always does. It always stands out. And I always like reference like when fucking Dennis Hopper and Dean Stockwell sing in Dreams and Blue Velvet. It's just so fucking off. It doesn't make any sense why they do it and like all in all. But damn, dude, it's fucking creepy. It's good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, like the score is supposed to support the story in the movie, and like nothing jumped out at me as like, oh, this is an amazing score, but also nothing jumped out at me like, oh, this is pure shit. Like, you know, I actually,
aside from the script,
it's all right. So I think both of us are saying like, I mean, if this is $20, I would say no, don't buy Beneath. But I think Beneath,
well, it's like $14.99.
They've been
right
keeping
now.
It like, yeah, $14.99. I think I bought it for like $16, so I would definitely, you know, I say check it out. But like, if you can rent this thing, you know, if you find it, if it eventually ends up on Netflix or something like that, if you're a fan of genre films, or if you're a fan of like,
yeah, it's
killer
definitely on
creature
Amazon
films,
Instant.
Yeah, if you're a fan of like killer creature films, like I think this is definitely worth a look. You know, mainly I think for the fish itself, but you know, I think there's enough on here that genre
support
fans will,
film.
Will definitely, you know, there's stuff in here to enjoy, you know. And like I said, I don't get all the freaking vitriol that's been thrown at this.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. It's unwarranted. The hate it does. I mean, trust me, it does have its problems, but it's not near as bad as what people make it out to be. You know, there are certain parts where you'll probably laugh and be like, "What the fuck, Brad? You're an idiot because you know you totally lied." But no, I mean, just take it easy. Just look at the film as a killer fish movie.
Yeah.
I guess if you look at it that way, because I was expecting more, because it kind of made itself, hey, we're going to give you more. But if it's actually just a killer fish movie,
it's killer fish.
Sorry.
Movie.
Yeah. I don't want to, you know, shit on the, which I have shit on the script. Sorry, screenwriters. I know it's hard to write a script.
Sorry, guys.
I don't want to pick on you too much. But just being honest.
Nah.
You know, it's hard to write a script and hard to get those characters where you want to go. And you did have a good idea, but you just didn't execute it.
Yeah. Yeah. It wants to be a lot more. Unfortunately, it doesn't get there, but I think it's definitely worth a look. Well, yeah. I think that's gonna do it for this podcast. We are out of time.
We talked about Beneath for 30 minutes.
I'm surprised. I'm actually surprised.
This is like, I think it's like our longest podcast, and you know, with a movie that we didn't think we would be able to talk about for an hour.
I mean, I kind of want to just I wanted to throw in like 5 minutes in our last podcast about this movie, but you know,
there's a lot to talk about.
I think so.
Because there's some stuff in there that's good. There's some stuff in there that's bad. So yeah. Watch it. Let us know what you think. Well, of course, let Scream Factory know. Maybe they might beef up their acquisitions and picks for contemporary releases, because it seems like at this point they are just releasing what doesn't get picked up.
Yeah. I don't know. All I know
I don't want to say that too hardcore, but you know, it's just, they have good taste. We know that. And these films that Beneath aside, because I think Beneath does fit in Scream Factory's catalog.
Yeah.
But some of this other stuff, I just don't get.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
That's me too. And I think
it's so. Let us know if you actually like the contemporary releases, because we might be alone on that one. You don't hear a lot of talk about them online. You only hear about the old ones.
Yeah.
You don't hear a lot about the new ones, and I'm not sure that's because people don't know they exist, they don't care, or they're just like us and they really don't like them.
Yeah.
So.
Well, definitely drop us a line. Let us know what you thought of Beneath. You can contact us. Go to thescreamcast.com. There's a link up there that says contact. Drop us an email, and we'd love to hear your thoughts on this movie or any of the other movies we've covered. And I would like to start reading some of your emails on the show, so drop us a line. You can also find us on Twitter at @scream_cast. You'll find me accidentally tweeting, thinking that I'm on my personal Twitter occasionally. Yeah, so
we try to put a letter of our name because sometimes people are going to think that I'm talking about rap music.
Or Frozen.
Or Frozen.
Sorry. I deleted it as fast as I could, but the person I was talking to responded to our Twitter, and I was like, damn it!
If you actually see any tweets that don't have the little, what do you call it, little arrow that I put?
I don't know. I can't find that. Dude, I can't find that arrow. I put a dot. Dot S.
Yeah, you can put a dot. That's fine. But I put a little arrow and a B. Okay. Mine will always have it. I'll never tweet anything without it. And if I do, I delete it and change it. Anything else, it's Sean. And say, fuck you, Sean, for using exactly. Screamcast Twitter account. Use your goddamn own. And I told you that today on Twitter.
You did. You put me in my place. Yeah,
because you talked about Wes Craven, motherfucker.
Goddamn. Okay.
We won't get into that. Let's save that for next podcast.
You can find me on Twitter, Sean C. DeRager. And DeRager is spelled DureGger. Okay?
I'm finally happy that you stopped asking me. And I'm at Brad F. Henderson, HENDERSON. And, we'll talk about movies. I'll never turn anybody down unless you're an asshole. Because I'm an asshole and two assholes don't mix. We saw that in Beneath.
They don't.
None of those assholes mixed.
Find us on iTunes. Leave a review for us, please. And then,
even if it's bad.
Even if, just leave really. Us a review. Don't. Positive reviews only. We're also on Stitcher. You can find us there. And, of course, we're at thescreamcast.com. I'm going to try to put up more reviews and news, stuff like that. So keep tabs on that. Otherwise, we got some great shows lined up, some great guests. I'm really excited to get to those. So
yeah, our next few shows are going to be all about the guests. So be prepared. Not going to say any names yet.
We're going to keep it in the mystery box, people.
Pretty excited about 7. That I'm pretty fucking pumped about.
Yep, it's going to be cool.
So you'll see him later.
All right, everybody. All of you have a great week. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
All right, see ya.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.